Buenos dias! Welcome to this episode of Days of Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings from the past, the olden days. This was broadcast quite a while ago, on the 13th of November 2024 last year. It originally contained quite a lot of copyrighted music, which you're not actually allowed to do when you upload podcasts, so I've had to remove all of that. So instead you're left with cavernous silence in the background. But don't worry, all of my classic jingles are still there, plus all of the movie and trailer clips. So hopefully you have enough context to go into each film, knowing a bit about them. But yes, you are stuck mainly with my voice for the next 30 minutes or so. But nevertheless, enjoy.
Daisy.
Daisy.
Midweek Movie Mumblings. Oh yes.
Hello, good and fine folks of Cambridgeshire. I hope we're having a wonderful morning slash afternoon slash evening slash whenever it is that you're listening to this. My name's Daisy and you join me for yet another whimsical week of mystical magical movie mumblings. Oh yes, all the adjectives today. Yeah, we're returning to our classic format. So we had a bit of a hiatus over the summer. And then, you know, we got nominated for a national award at the Student Radio Awards for this specific show. And I was also coming back at the same time with the Cambridge Film Festival. And I'm just so glad and honoured to be back with you. We're returning to the classic format. Three films. Nothing special about today, apart from the fact, you know, every show is a bit special. What can I say? But, you know, like today, we're just doing three films. We're going to give each 8 minutes to have a little chat about them. And yeah, I'm very excited to talk to you about them. Two of them are two new releases, and one of them is a decidedly not new release from 2022. But yeah, we'll get to that. I should probably say what those films are. Those films are The Substance from 2024, Smile from 2022, and Fabled to be maybe Clint Eastwood's last film before he goes into retirement. I don't know, though. I wouldn't put it past him to make another one. Juror number two, also from 2024. As regular listeners of this show will be aware, today is a pre-recorded show. So if you would like to get in touch with me, please feel free to, but I will not be able to interact with you live on air. But you can get in touch with me via my Instagram at Daisy's Magical Mystery Mix via my email dmmm@camfm.co.uk. It sounded like I was going to say something else there, but no, those are the two primary ways, so make sure you get in touch with me by either of those. But for now, hey, let's get on with it with our first film, The Substance. Enjoy. Also, the trailer clips are back. Exciting. Yay. Okay, bye.
Daisy's Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings on Cam FM.
People always ask for something new. It's inevitable. At 50, well, it stops.
Have you ever dreamt of a better version of yourself? Younger, more beautiful, more perfect. One single injection unlocks your DNA and will release another version of yourself. This is The Substance.
So, The Substance. Now, this is a very, very exciting film. We'll get into it properly, but I have been wanting to see this for quite a while now. I've been hearing everyone raving about it, and I was really worried it was out of cinemas. But no, still on at the Light in Cambridge, not a plug, but I did see it there. Directed by French director Coralie Fargeat, who I have not seen any films from before, but my God, I do want to see some more if this is the kind of thing I can expect. So, The Substance, you might have heard a little bit from that trailer, but it's basically about a aging middle-aged actress turned sort of It's very strange. Turn kind of like exercise DVD, like, you know, the kind of VHSs you'd get in the 80s of like exercise DVDs, which you don't get very well. But anyway, that's the conceit of the film, played by Demi Moore. She's called Elizabeth Sparkle, which is just delightful. Takes this mysterious substance, which basically births a younger version of yourself from you. I don't know if anyone's seen the trailers, but it's kind of like the sewn up spine at the back. Well, your younger self literally bursts out the back of you. And in this case, out comes Margaret Qualley, who has been a favourite of this show before. We last spoke about her in Driveway Dolls, I think, or Poor Things, I'm not sure. All Kinds of Kindness. I'm not sure if we covered Kinds of Kindness on here. I'm pretty sure we did, but anyway. So, this is such an interesting, fun body horror flick. If you've listened to this show before, you'll know I'm a big fan of body horror and horror in general. I love the boundaries it pushes. I love the artistry of it. I love the kind of yucks of it. I don't know. Maybe I'm a weird person that I like body horror, but I don't think I am. I don't think I'm alone in that. And it's just so interesting seeing what incredibly talented artists and visionaries can do working in tandem with each other to create something truly horrific, which is very much the case here. Everything is in bubblegum pink, you know, completely, you know, if I can say this at 9 o'clock in the morning, balls to the wall. You know, it's not a subtle film, put it that way. I watched the Red Letter Media review of this and the artist Jay Bauman, you know, visionary that man is, described it as like being beaten over the head repeatedly by the message of this film. And I can only completely, like, 100% agree. It is not a film for the faint of heart. Even I, as kind of like, I mean, I don't want to describe myself as like a seasoned body horror. Like, ew. But like, you know what I mean? I've seen my fair share of like Cronenbergs and things like that. But there were still some moments in this where I was like, okay, you know, that's a bit much. That's what I like to see. I like to see those boundaries being pushed. But I don't think this is a film you'd particularly want to watch with, say, I don't know, your grandma, your mum, your dad, that sort of thing. I mean, unless you're kind of into that. I mean, who knows? I watched the whole of Game of Thrones with my parents, so you might be into that. The soundtrack as well is something I really wanted to shout out, because I found out it was only written like a month before like the film was written. Like, I can't remember, something like, don't quote me on that. But it was it produced under incredibly stressful last minute circumstances, and I just really wanted to shout it out. I've been listening to it a lot. I listened to it on my way home, which probably wasn't the best idea. Well, I don't know, maybe it was. It was a banging soundtrack. So I'm just trying to find. I had the name written down here, but being the highly professional award nominated radio host I am, I've misplaced it. So old woman looks up. Yes, Rafferty. Okay, I knew it. I'm so sorry. That took me so long. But yes, Rafferty. I love me a good synth electronica soundtrack. You know, I love me some soundtracks of various things. I mean, that's why you're listening to the Skyrim soundtrack right now. You know, I search high and low for my quality soundtracks, and The Substance has one. It's very intense. Maybe not the sort of thing you'd want to listen to whilst, I don't know, writing an essay or revising. I don't know. But I don't know. I think it still kind of slaps. Anyway, the main thing I want to shout out about this film, as I've said before, is the kind of artistry of the practical effects, the body horror aspects, that kind of thing. They truly are out of this world phenomenal. They reminded me a lot of the Rob Bottin special effects from The Thing, which, if you know my opinion of The Thing and specifically of Rob Bottin's ability in visual effects, you'll know that's incredibly, incredibly high praise. So yeah. Also, I saw this film at like 4 p.m. on a random Wednesday. So there were like four other people in the cinema screening, and I was laughing. This is a hysterically funny film. Like, it's intention. I've looked it up subsequently. It's meant to be funny. It's just intensely hilarious. But I was the only person in the cinema laughing. And I felt like such a psychopath, because I was like, oh my God, no one else in the screening is laughing. Am I just like weird? I'm weird. I'm a weirdo. I don't know. But apparently you're meant to find it funny. So there you go. The satire is on point. It's truly incredible. I think I gave it 4.5. I think I'd probably, if I saw it again, I'd give it 5. It's so good. I think the only issue I had with it is I felt like it could be a bit shorter. But then I kind of think to myself, is there anything I'd cut from it? And I mean, maybe the kind of like neighbor character I might cut. I think he doesn't really add that much. But again, I don't know. I'm sure this is going to be ripe ground for YouTube essayists everywhere. I can't wait for the YouTube essays on this. It's going to be great. And, you know, it's just genuinely a fantastic film. Again, I wouldn't recommend seeing this. Oh my God, it's nearly 2.5 hours. I didn't even realize. Anyway, I wouldn't recommend seeing this with your dearest members of your family, you know, unless you guys are kind of into that sort of thing. I don't know. But just to give you my little mini review that I wrote when I saw it, what a great year for body horror weirdos like me, man. This was fab. It was me and 4 other people in the cinema, and I was laughing like a maniac to an otherwise silent auditorium, but like an absolute psycho, but then looked on here and realized, oh, they're the weird ones. Maybe that's what I should have expected seeing this at 4 p.m. on a random Wednesday. And then I also put, this is literally what happened to me the first time I drank Monster Mango Loco. Now, first of all, obviously other energy drink bans are available. And secondly, I was thinking about that one Leinzinger review the entire time I was watching that film. And now that I read it out to you now, this was literally me the first time I drank a Monster Mango Loco. It doesn't quite hit the same note, at least. I don't know. That's what I find. Let me know your thoughts. If you've seen the substance, send me in your thoughts. I'd love to hear from you. But yeah, an incredibly talented director working with an incredibly talented cast and an incredibly talented team. I would agree that this is one of Demi Moore's best performances that I've ever seen, at the very least. And yeah, very good. On to our next horror film, which came out from a few years ago. Hoping to see Smile 2 in cinemas soon. I haven't seen it yet, but yeah, the original Smile, as inspired by Alton Towers, except not really. Okay, bye!
What is it you like to talk about?
My patient. Hi. I know you're nervous. I just want to have a chat.
I'm seeing something no one else can see except for me. It's smiling at me. No! Oh my God!
Yesterday, a patient in your care died brutally in front of you.
I need to find an explanation for what happened.
It's smiling at me. It's smiling at me.
Anyway, Smile, directed by Parker Finn from 2022. Oh my God, Daisy, how out of touch are you? Why are you only just talking about this film now? Well, I only just saw it now, okay? Look, I can't see everything as it comes out. I'm not Mark Kermode, okay? No one's paying me to... I have to pay to see these films out of pocket. Well, unless, you know, it was the Cambridge Film Festival for which I got, you know, a press pass. Anyway. Anyway, going back to the film at hand, Smile. I have kind of not... I never really wanted to see this, actually. It kind of came out and I thought the advertising was insanely cringe. It reminded me, as I mentioned in my previous little link there, it reminded me far too much of the Alton Towers Smiler advertising from back in the day, I think back in 2013, if I'm not mistaken, when that ride was opened. So if you're a video game / film / theme park, you know, nerd, I feel like if you're one of those, you're also nerds for the other two. Let's not get it twisted. If you're anything like me, you'll know that the Smiler advertising for Alton Towers back in the day was incredibly similar to this, like that kind of plastered on Aphex Twin-esque smile, you know, corner to corner, and kind of creepily staring at the camera. I mean, when I was 11 and the Smiler ride was being teased, I found it a bit cringe. And with the advertising Smile, I also found it a bit cringe. In the actual film, so when I actually got around to seeing this film, I watched this film, by the way, because everyone says Smile 2 is really good. And I really wanted to see Smile 2. So I thought I should watch the original. I should read the sacred original text before I go into the sequel. So I got around to watching it and I did think that the kind of plastered on smiles are a bit cringe. I don't find them particularly scary. There are aspects of this film I do think are very well done and are quite scary. But I do not think the smile part is particularly scary. Like, I just found it a bit cringe, to be honest with you. And I know that's like the lowest form of media criticism, but I did. Okay, I thought to myself, imagine being the actor they've hired to be the spooky person in this scene. And you're just going like, into the camera. I just found it too embarrassing, man. I just couldn't. Anyway, I mean, that's just me. However, there were aspects of this film that were genuinely really scary. So towards the end, there's a lovely bit of extreme gore. Yeah, towards the end of this film, there's a lovely bit of extreme gore. But it's true, there is. And I very much enjoyed that. And I wasn't expecting it. Well, I kind of was. I knew it was in there because I'd seen clips of it on Twitter and things. You know, hashtag not a shout out to Twitter. or whatever name it's up. What's the other name it's going by? Oh yeah, I can't remember because the anyway, before we, I'm not getting bogged down in that. But I knew it was going to happen at the end, but it still shocked me when it did, and I rewound and I watched it because it is quite extreme. You know, a bit of, I'm not trying to spoil or anything, but there is quite an extreme bit of violence. And I thought the gore in this was really well done. Like, it's an 18, just so you are aware. Two 18s on this list, my God, you know, what is this? But, you know, I just, there were aspects of it that I found very conventional and boring. It does give you that Blumhouse vibe. In fact, was this distributed by Blumhouse? Hold on. If I go... No, it was not. Interesting. Well, it feels very Blumhouse. It's actually Paramount Pictures. There you go. And it just felt very big studio horror, which it is. It felt quite safe. It wasn't a PG-13, you know, if you're aware, PG-13 being the MPAA, don't get me all started on my film ratings, you know me, I'm a nerd when it comes to it. But if you're not aware, the PG-13 is the American standard of like 12A, and it's the rating you go for if you're a filmmaker and you want to get as many butts in the cinema as possible to see your film. It applies to a broad range of age demographics. Pretty much anyone can go and see it as long as they've got a parent with them. Bish bash bosh, lovely stuff. And you know, you can even have a couple of swears in there, you know, why not? Everyone's happy. But what that has caused is there's a lot of PG-13 horror, which is basically horror that doesn't really try anything new. It doesn't really push any boundaries. It's just trying to be as conventional and non-controversial as possible in order to appeal to a younger demographic, which is just boring in my opinion. If you're going to do horror, be horrific. Do you know what? That's the whole point. You can do slow, scary movies, but I wouldn't class that as a horror film. A horror film is like horror. I want to be horrified by what I'm seeing. And this definitely has that. Also, the main performance in this film is by... is it Saoirse? Saoirse? I'm going to go with Saoirse. I'm probably going to be Saoirse Bacon, Daisy in Post. If I'm wrong, correct me. It's actually Saoirse. Or the other name. Who plays the main character, Rose Cotter, I thought did a really good job. And I didn't realise, I mean, I probably should have realised by the last name, Kevin Bacon's daughter. I did think to myself as I was watching this, I was like, wow, she looks a lot like Kevin Bacon. And then I looked up and it's like, oh yeah, yeah, you are. Anyway, the director of this film, Parker Finn, I originally got mixed up with, oh, what's his name? I'm doing so badly with names.
Psst, the name's Osgood. Osgood Perkins. So there.
I'm doing so badly. Not Patton Oswalt. Oh my God. The guy who directed Long Legs, Daisy, correct me in post. I'm going to forget to do that. But anyway, if I don't, correct me in post. But yeah, Parker Finn, who directed this film, I've not seen any of his previous films. He did also direct Smile 2, which everyone says is way better than this one. So I'll be interested to see. But yeah, a conventional horror film full of yucks. And it was okay. I think I gave it a 3 at stars out of 5, I think. Let me double check that. I mean, again, or maybe 2.5, I think. Yeah, I think I gave it 2.5. Let's have a look. I gave it 3. There you go then. Yeah, I think it's fun. Definitely like one to watch. I think I gave it 3 because I love the like really horrifying aspects of it. I love the gore. I loved when it pushed boundaries. I loved when it surprised me being a big budget studio horror film. But it didn't shock me, it didn't wow me, it didn't like make me go, oh my God, this is the best thing ever, which I think it requires to be pushed up into that like 4+ star category for me. Like I have to be like, whoa, by a certain aspect of it. And I wasn't, there was very brief moments of that, but I wasn't like a sustained thing. So give it a watch if you're interested in horror and you like your horror films and you're interested in seeing Smile 2. I'm hopefully going to see it at the end of this week and it will be on next week's show. Here's hoping. But yeah, a conventional horror film, see it if you want. Yeah. Don't really have much to say about that, except that our next film is Jura 2, Clint Eastwood. Oh my God, let's get started. Let's get cracking. All right, bye!
It was last October. It was raining, and I hit something. I got out the car and I looked around. I checked, I didn't see anything, and I figured it was a deer that ran off.
Okay, what's the problem?
I got called for jury duty. The Kendall Carter case?
1 year ago, on October 25th, the defendant, James Scythe, and his then-girlfriend, Kendall Carter, they had a fight.
Oh dear, it's Clint Eastwood. So yeah, juror number two. If you know me in real life, you'll know that I am not a fan of Mr. Eastwood. Listen, okay, before you all come at me, okay? I get that he was a massive film star, blah, 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 and like, you know, la, 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 he's contributed a lot to film, da, 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 da. But that does not excuse him from the cinematic excrement, if I'm allowed to call it that, at 9 a.m. in the morning. That was The Mule from 2019, I do believe. Oh my God, I have never been sat through a more miserable, like, oh, 2018, there you go. A more miserable, like, horrendously badly written and just all around just wish-fulfillment-y, Mary Sue-y film. I think it's like Clint Eastwood plays a hardened drug dealer, drug trafficker that he plays himself, obviously. And he's just completely irresistible to women, obviously. And he's followed around by like this gaggle of women, and it's just grim and just like, and it just reeks of just like just the most vile male gaze. Anyway, so with that in mind, other films of Clint Eastwood's I've not particularly gotten on with. Gran Torino, I think, suffers from many of the same problems as The Mule, but to a lesser extent, so I can kind of forgive it for that. However, the films where he doesn't cast himself in the lead role, I find a lot better, and I can kind of see his directorial vision sort of seeping in there. So Sully, for example, from 2016, which was his film with Tom Hanks about, you know, the Miracle on the Hudson, I really enjoyed. I love bureaucratic-y, vaguely stressy films, and I really enjoyed Sully. I thought it did a really good job at kind of dramatizing the kind of action of it. However, it does also fall into the same trap of those women do be bad and annoying, though. But when they cast Anna Gunn, who plays Skylar in the original Breaking Bad series, and if you aren't aware, Skylar is probably the most vehemently hated and most misogynistically commentated against character, female character, from any TV show that I've ever seen, at least. And I felt like the casting of her in the sort of very villainous, you know, evil bad doer role in Sully was very deliberate in that way. But anyway, also Mystic River suffers the same problem, but I feel like I'm running out of time to talk about the actual film we're meant to be talking about here, which is Juror Number Two. So with all of that baggage in mind, I came into Juror Number Two a bit nervous. I was kind of like, I don't know if I'm going to particularly like this. Like, again, it's Nicholas Hoult and Toni Collette, who the last time they starred in a film together, by the way, was in 2002's About a Boy, which is is my favourite film of all time. So that certainly is a good sign. Let's not get it twisted. I enjoyed this film while I was watching it, I think, is probably the nicest thing I could say about it. I mean, again, that sounds like I'm going to be really harsh. I'm not going to be that harsh. I actually gave this like 3 stars, which I think is probably a bit generous, but it's a courtroom drama, and it's so badly written. Like, it's so completely unbelievable. Like, even though I was enjoying it for the kind of progression of the drama and like just how watchable it was, there are so many moments where you're like, what? Like, there are so many moments, and I don't want to get into spoilers. I mean, again, the trailer gives a fair bit away, but I don't want to get into spoilers of the actual like main part of the film that isn't given away by the trailer. But the actual mechanisms of the plot, like the things that are like, okay, this happened, which caused this to happen, are so completely unbelievable. It's almost laughable. I really want to get into spoilers here, but I won't. Maybe I'll do like an extra show or something just to talk about, because I saw this with my dearest friends Lyra and Clay, who are both on my Cambridge Film Festival special from last week. Just talking to them afterwards just made me laugh so hard, because I realised how incredibly stupid the premise of this film is. But there you go. Don't go into this expecting it to be like, oh, it's the new 12 Angry Men. Like, I think Lyra, to quote Lyra, said it was Anatomy of a Fall but stupider, and I 100% agree. It's just so like, it's so cheesy, and it's so it is very predictable. That's the other thing to note. Like, it's very, at no point was I like kind of surprised by what I was seeing. The original twist, which is kind of foreshadow, very foreshadow being a quite light word to use in the trailer, I was a bit like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Let's see where this goes. But then they do absolutely nothing with it. So I'd say if you're looking for a film to watch with your parents, I'm going to watch this with my parents. Shout out Trudy and Max if you're listening. It's definitely like a good film to watch with your parents with, like, I don't know, a burger, or like if you're doing some crafting, which I will be doing very shortly. It's a good film to slap on in the background during that. But other than that, in any other circumstance, give it a miss. Again, I don't want to be too rude because apparently it's Clint Eastwood's final film before he goes into retirement. And yes, he has contributed quite a lot to the film industry as a whole. However, I am yet to watch a film of his that I'm like, that's an instant five star. I've not seen Million Dollar Baby, which everyone says is like incredible and a masterpiece. But that's because I value my mental health, and apparently it's very sad, and I know what happens in it, guys, and I don't know if I can emotionally put myself through that. But in the meantime, though, would I recommend this film? Yes? Question mark? If you're seeing it, you know, of a Saturday evening with your parents, as I say. Anyway, what did I give my... Oh, no, that's The Mule. I gave it one star, The Mule. Oh, dear. But Juror Number 2... I said, of Juror Number 2, I gave it 3 stars, as I mentioned, and I said, a serviceable bureaucratic funsies, if you turn your brain off for 2 hours, the more I think about it, the more I think about the actual plot, the more stupid and completely weird and I realise it was, and how much more I dislike it. And then I just waxed lyrical about Toni Collette and Nicholas Hoult being back on screen with each other. Shout out, okay, Oliver, who was on last week's show, who really enjoyed it and disagrees with me about my opinion of Juror Number 2, and I am definitely in the minority. There are lots of people who think this is one of the best films ever made. Hard to disagree on that. But, you know, I have to air all opinions on this show, mainly my own, but I have to air all other opinions. So, you know, you might see this and think, Daisy, what the hell are you talking about? I loved it. If you're someone who likes Clint Eastwood films and kind of those stressy bureaucratic films, which I also really like, I just don't like the former of those two, go and see it. You know, I'd love to hear your opinion on it and let me know. But anyway, that's all of our 3 films. Out of all 3 of those, I definitely would most strongly recommend seeing The Substance. It's an absolute masterpiece, a modern cult classic, no doubt. Not even a cult classic, just a classic. And yeah, take it away, me, from 5 minutes' time. Yeah, okay, bye!
Daisy's Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings on Cam FM.
Thank you so much yet again for listening to this week's episode of Daisy's Magical Mystery Midweek Movie Mumblings. I hope you enjoyed yourself and, you know, I hope it gave you something to think about and maybe your next cinematic pick. You should go and watch The Substance right now. On that note, we discuss The Substance, Smile and Juror Number 2. The Substance and Juror Number 2 being new releases from this year and Smile being originally from 2022. I'm hoping to see the sequel at some point this week, and I'll tell you what my thoughts are, but, you know, next week. That's kind of how this show works. If you'd like to catch up with all things Daisy's Magical Mystery Mix in the meantime, you can go over to my Instagram at Daisy's Magical Mystery Mix on Instagram. Yes, thank you, Daisy. Honestly, my brain is not working today. Or alternatively, you can email me directly, dmmm at chemfm.co.uk. Please send me your thoughts, feedback, any reviews or thoughts about the films I've discussed today that you might have. I'd love to hear from you. I can read them out on next week's show as well. And yeah, thank you so much again for listening. I hope you have a very film-tastic week. And yeah, I think it might be a fun feature. Maybe you guys, like, email me in, let me know what films you've seen of the past week. It doesn't have to be something that we've talked about on here before. And yeah, let me know. On that note, we do also have a list containing every single film that we've ever discussed on this show on Letterboxd. You can find that via my Instagram at Daisy's Magical Mystery Mix. If you go onto the other shows bit on the highlight and you click along, you can find the link to that. But yeah, in the meantime, have a wonderful rest of your week. I will speak to you very soon. Remember to tune in for Daisy's Magical Mystery Mix on Saturday at 6 p.m, our last show before the Student Radio Awards. It's very exciting. And yeah, speak to you soon. Bye! Okay, bye!